All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, October 16th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is a chilly and drizzly 47 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show IoT, Virtual Assistants, Spying, Recording, Evidence, and Ultrasonic Chirps. We took a look at a few stories with virtual assistants, one being Amazon's Alexa and another being the Google Home devices, and how they were recording things that were happening in your environment and saving your recordings up to the cloud. There was one case in particular, a murder case down in Arkansas, where the Amazon audio data was pulled as evidence in a murder case. Now, we have allowed this technology to move into our lives with our smartphones to start. It became addictive, and people want it in their lives. It makes life easier for you to keep track of things, keep track of phone numbers, things that we used to be able to remember. We covered a story one time about how the use of these devices are making our memories worse because we rely on the machine, just like with the internet. You know, I feel naked without the internet, being able to do a quick search to look something up because I depend upon it a lot. And I'm sure a lot of us do. And they are using that same dangling carrot, that dependency that they have enabled in us, to now roll out these next levels of technology. We've looked at wearables, and we've looked at swallowables and edibles. And I think we're going to cover some of those today. I ran across a few stories that caught my attention. First one to go into looking at virtual assistants. We heard about how, I think it was Google, was teaming up with Target and Walmart and Home Depot to combat Amazon and their virtual assistant voice shopping capabilities. Well, listen to this. BMW is now going to integrate Amazon's Alexa into all of their models starting in 2018. From 2018, the BMW group is planning to equip all vehicle models from BMW and Mini with Amazon's voice assistant Alexa. VW, Seat, Skoda, and Ford also intend to use the artificial intelligence and thereby collect extensive data. And I was thinking about this. We talked about this a long time ago. How long is it going to be before the information that is being collected about your speed and your path and your historical data, just like your browsing history, but now your driving history, how long is it going to be before insurance companies get to pay for that data, or insurance companies require you to give them access to that data before they will insure you? Because that's going to be pretty frightening. We talked a while ago about corporate fleet vehicles already doing that sort of thing. A friend had a company car that was already collecting speed, and it'll give you warnings after you exceed the speed limit. And that information gets sent back to not only the company, but to the insurance company as well. And if you have so many infractions, your benefits of having a company car will be removed. So all the new BMWs and Minis sold from mid-2018 are to be equipped with Amazon's cloud-based voice assistant. And it's not just a cloud-based voice assistant. It's an artificially intelligent virtual assistant that will be collecting data and interfacing directly with your vehicle. The BMW group announced the other day voice interaction with Alexa's AI, which end users have so far experienced by using Amazon's Echo at Home, should allow car users to access new services, entertainment, and shopping opportunities while you're driving. Almost all of Alexa's skills, which would be Amazon or third-party Alexa applications, should be then available for use in cars. Amazon's full integration is under development using the BMW Connect service, and it has been possible to check vehicle information and consult appointments since about 2016 in some countries, and this has allowed users of Alexa to check vehicle information such as BMW's state of charge or fuel level and control their car via remote services from their home. By interacting with the learning cloud in the background, the vehicle's user driver experience can be more digital and more personalized. Deep learning by Alexa allows AI to respond more precisely to each user, and the machine's ability to analyze and interpret human language improves with each request or query to Alexa. More importantly, car makers and service providers can learn more about the vehicle every time Alexa is used, and then can address future offers and services more precisely to each customer, creating a new digital business model. In addition to BMW, other OEMs are planning to implement Alexa in their own vehicles after U.S. company Ford had already announced its collaboration with Amazon earlier this year. Volkswagen and the VW Group subsidiary Skoda and Seat followed suit. So I ran across the BMW Connect as part of Amazon. I looked it up to see exactly what you would be able to control with your vehicle and Alexa connection. This is the BMW Connected Technology Group at Amazon. The BMW Connected Skill currently supports users in the United States, and the Skill is a companion to the BMW Connected mobile app. And once you've successfully linked the Skills to your BMW Connect account, please say, "Alexa, ask BMW for help," to further explore the features supported with your specific car model. With Alexa, BMW Connect is literally coming home. Manage your schedule by asking when you should leave for your next trip. Start your journey in comfort by switching on the climate control in advance, and keep your BMW secure by locking the doors without ever lifting a finger. You can ask questions or give commands such as, "What is my next trip? When should I leave for my next trip? What time is my next appointment? Send my next trip to the car, activate climate control, and lock the doors." Plus, for certain vehicle models, you can also ask, "Is my BMW locked? Are my windows up? What is my fuel range? And is the trunk locked?" And it's free, by the way, for download. But you have to have an enabled car. Now, think about this one. Just 10 years ago, I was thinking about this morning. Just 10 years ago, back in 2007, there were some companies out there that were offering GPS-connected devices to be able to track fleet vehicles, like we were just talking about previously, not pulling black box information, but just GPS location, such as taxis or, like I said, fleet cars for a company fleet. And there were a few IPOs that had happened. I remember because I had a few family members who were involved with those IPOs. And those companies ended up not doing too well back in 2007. And I'm going to tell you why. Because back at that time, people still had ethical quandary with bagging, tagging, and tracking. Okay? Well, I saw a story this morning out of The Verge, dated October 16th, which is today, 5:15 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Samsung Connect Tag tracks your kid or your pet for up to 7 days per charge. Now let's get excited, because I'm going to tell you that I bet you this thing is going to go off without a hitch this time around. People aren't going to question the Internet of Things anymore. Samsung will release a trackable tag that says it is the first consumer mobile product to use narrowband network technology. Now, this came up in an article the other day. We were looking at the Internet of Things as this new narrowband networking. And to be completely honest, I don't know much about it. I'm assuming it's a frequency, and it's kind of probably going to be like Bluetooth, where it's within a short range, but it's a separate wireless network. Narrowband networks connect the Internet of Things devices through, cellular communication bands. And the networks are designed for devices that use small amounts of data and power and provide the capability to securely connect to the Internet for location services. The Samsung Connect tag provides location information both indoors and out using GPS, Wi-Fi-based positioning, and cell ID for location tracking. It also has an accelerometer and three colored LEDs, which have a claimed battery life of 7 days before needing a recharge. This current tag only works with Android devices. Samsung says it can be attached to, say, a child's backpack, or to a dog's collar, or to a personal belonging like your keys or purse to track where they are. The concept is similar to Bluetooth trackers like Tile, though they depend on a phone linked to the tracker's network coming within range of the tag to report the location. Samsung says the tag has a geofence feature to notify you when your kid, pet, or object strays beyond the limits you set. You know what's so messed up about this is probably, oh, I would say 2002 or so, we had talked about developing a little mobile application like this where you could connect your family members, such as your children, and set a location, because all that information is available, the geolocation data, and you can program with that. But to set a limit, so once your kid goes outside, boop, 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 it gives the parent a notification. For example, the tag can trigger lights to turn on when a user enters the room or sends notifications when a child enters school. And there's also a function to request the tag's location at any given time through your smartphone, which can be helpful if you've parked in a massive parking lot. And if you've given your tag to a child, they can use the tag to send you their location details, or you can set up location alerts to send you periodically where they are. The square tag itself is quite small and compact at 1.19 centimeters thick and 4.21 centimeters wide. It also is dust and waterproof with a battery that can last up to 7 days on one charge. The tag will be showcased at Samsung's developer conference in San Francisco later this week and will be initially sold in Korea for an undisclosed price before rolling out to other countries over the next few months. So, guys, I'm just saying, like 10 years ago, this technology was not ready for prime time, just like artificial intelligence and some of the surface computing and touchscreen computers were. They rolled those all out once before, and they didn't do too well. But it's coming again, and these ubiquitous trackers using narrowband, which is pretty interesting, going to be a part of our new Internet of Things lives, those billions we found out the other day of devices that are all coming online over the next few years. Well, talking about the Internet of Things, we have our devices, and then we have our little hangables, I don't know what you want to call them, our tracking devices. And then we have our wearables. We talked about Project Jacquard quite a long time ago in regards to Regina Duggan, who is part of Google's ATAP or Advanced Technology Group. And they had started a project working alongside Levi's to develop a wearable smart Levi's jean jacket. Well, guess what? As of September 25th, 2017, this Levi's jacket with a smart sleeve is finally going on sale for $350. I think the price point is a little too high for this one to catch on. Project Jacquard is here. More than a year after it was announced and 2 years after we saw the first demonstration of touch-sensitive fabric, and we watched an interview with Regina Duggan, they actually wove the touch-sensitive fibers into the fabric of the jacket, and it was very flexible, so you didn't have to worry about it breaking when being washed. This Levi's jacket with a smart sleeve is finally going on sale. I have been wearing this Levi commuter trucker jacket for a few days now, and it's very nice, and that would be the author of the story. It fits very well, and it looks great. And by swiping or tapping the fabric on the left cuff, I've been able to control my smartphone. Whether those things add up to a $350 value, ding, the price of this jacket is entirely a different question, and you could probably order one while driving in your BMW with your new Alexa assistant in 2018. It is targeted at people who commute by bike, and I think the only people beyond that target market is going to be a few techies and people who just really like jean jackets. And it works with both Android and iPhone, by the way. The standard Levi's trucker jacket costs $148. And then you can just put your smartphone in the pocket. Though Levi's has been quick to point out that the designer denim jackets can run well over $400. I am no fashion critic, but I can tell you I am impressed with the fit and the look of this one. When you talk to both Levi's and Google, they are very eager to tell a design story about this jacket, but not just a technology story. It comes out of a partnership between the clothing company and a small division of Google dedicated to experimentation. We've seen lots of weird projects inside Google's ATAP division, but most of them have ended up getting scuttled. This one, Project Jacquard, finally made it. Jacquard is named after a loom, and the core idea is both simple and complicated. Make a fabric touch-sensitive like the screen on your phone. It's achieved through an even more simple process, which turned out to be devilishly complicated to execute. Basically, Google and Levi's had to figure out how to integrate capacitive threads with a copper core into the actual manufacturing process for a denim jacket, and then use tiny little Bluetooth dongles that attach to a button to communicate to your phone. It took a lot of design work to make that happen, and because the jacket needed to feel like a jacket, the result is a thing you can actually put in the washing machine and the dryer without ruining the circuitry. We want to make a garment, not a gadget, says Ivan Puparov, the person in charge of Google's side of the project. And working with Levi's to create the manufacturing process for the jacket, I think he's come a long way toward achieving that goal. But okay, how does it work? Well, as I said, you attach a small little tag to the left cuff of the jacket, and then you pair it to an app on your phone, and then go through a little tutorial that sets up three different gestures you can configure. You can brush in, brush out, and double tap. There is a fourth gesture, and that is just holding your hand on the fabric, which is hard-coded to just shut off your phone. The idea is that when you're on a bike, you can just reach over and brush your sleeve to interact with your phone and get audio clues. And it's certainly a lot safer than, you know, messing with your actual touchscreen while you ride. But is it any more convenient than, say, a smart control in a Bluetooth headset? Well, probably not. But it's a neat thing. And again, Levi's and Google are trying to sell you a nice jacket that does come with extra stuff, not just a gadget's technical capabilities. The Jacquard system can automatically tell when you're wearing the jacket, and it sets up your phone to a kind of biking mode, and then it reads text aloud either through your phone itself or through your headphones, and it can be configured to only allow calls and texts from important people. Well, there you go. The most fun you can have with the tech is the screen, where you can see the real-time interaction with your touch-sensitive threads. It looks a little like a guitar fret, but then you can run your fingers along it and see it working, including how hard you are pushing down. It's a silly thing. You're kind of just pushing buttons and seeing something light up, but the buttons are the threads, which is really neat. So, all right, now we're going to roll this out, consumerism all the way, to get you to follow that Pied Piper to the world of the Internet of Things, where they are using it in crime prevention and detection. And eventually in the medical industrial complex. We're going to look at that as well. I have to tell you, this past weekend, my favorite t-shirt place, and if you want to take a look, I highly recommend these guys. It's the number six, $6shirts.com. And if you buy 10 t-shirts, you get them for $5 a piece. And sometimes you can find free shipping coupons online for them too. But this is where I got my Skynet t-shirt. And then I got another one from They Live with two TV reporters sitting in front of a camera, and you can actually see their faces as if you're looking through the glasses, so they look all alien-esque. And underneath it says, watch TV. I like wearing that one in public. But then the one I found this weekend, and I had to get it, started, it's called Evolution Determination, and it starts with like a little macaw monkey walking at the very far left side, and then it goes to like a chimpanzee, and then it goes to an upright hominid, some sort of hybrid that still looks pretty monkey or gorilla-esque. And then the next one is like a Neanderthal, and then the next one is kind of a postmodern caveman with a spear. And then the one before the last is modern man looking dressed. And these are all in black and white, by the way, looking dressed in conventional clothing and shoes. And the very last one is a Terminator robot with a clampy hand grabbing the one before it, human, by the throat and holding him in the air as he's screaming. Ah! I had to get that one because this is what is going to be happening. Technology is going to get humans and humanity by the throat and put us in a chokehold once we allow this technology into our bodies and become part of the Internet of Things. And I know I sound like a broken record, but every single day lately, I've been seeing news stories where they are just moving fast and furiously forward in figuring out ways not only to genetically modify live organisms such as plants and humans and mouses, but also how to get little nanomachines into you. This one is out of Popular Mechanics, and I missed this one the other day for reading it for the show, but it was dated August 17th, 2017. Scientists create nanomachines to treat ulcers in mice. These tiny nanomachines are better than standard medicine, and they are completely digestible. Well, this is the second digestible nanomachine we've read about over the last few days. In the future, all of our medicine will be delivered by tiny nanobots floating through our body. And that would be, according to Kurzweil many years ago. At least that is if certain sci-fi predictions come true. But today's scientists just took the first step toward making that a reality by creating tiny biological nanomachines designed to deliver antibiotics to mice. And I'm thinking about this. There are a lot of reports about stomach ulcers being caused by one particular type of gut bacteria. And I don't remember exactly which type of gut bacteria that is, but you can look that one up. And we've read about CRISPR pills being used to combat antibiotic resistance and be used in the place of antibiotics in the future, being able to splice and dice gut bacteria to then produce new medications, let's say. It's part of a living therapeutics program. Scientists first infected the mice with a type of bacteria that causes stomach ulcers. Ding! Bacterial ulcers are a tough one to treat because the antibiotics typically cannot survive in the harsh stomach acid. In order for the treatments to work, patients are typically given drugs to lower stomach acidity, and these drugs can have some unpleasant side effects. Well, instead, the researchers developed tiny nanomachines made of magnesium. And when the magnesium comes into contact with stomach acid, it releases bubbles of hydrogen that reduce the acidity locally without any side effects. And as a bonus, the hydrogen bubbles also push the nanomachines around. And when the acidity is lowered past a certain point, the nanomachines are designed to emit the antibiotic. This antibiotic is gradually administered over a few days, and at the end of this administration, the infection is gone. The stomach's acidity goes back to normal, and the nanomachines are dissolved and then digested. Of course, this is a long way from what most people think of as nanobots, but it's an important first step, and this technology, as it is improved, we could see this type of nanomachine used to treat other difficult illnesses, and we might not be as far away from that as the science fiction future made us think we were. And like I told you, it's coming faster than you possibly imagine. I came across this story on Thursday. I had it queued up. This was from 2014, which surprised me. Out of MIT Technology Review, micro robots working together to build with glass, metal, and electronics. Tiny robots that work together like ants could lead to a new way to manufacture complex structures and electronics. Now remember, this was 2014, and it is now fast forward 2017, and we have little nanorobots that are edible that can tinker around inside your body as well. Someone glancing through the door of Anjo Wong Foy's lab at SRI International might think that his equipment is infested by ants. Dark shapes about a centimeter across move to and fro over elevated walkways, and they weave around obstacles and carry small sticks. A closer look makes it clear that these are busy critters, and they are man-made, in fact. Wang Foy is a senior research engineer at SRI and has built an army of magnetically steered workers to test the idea that micro robots could be a better way to assemble electronic components or build other small structures. Wang Foy's robotic workers have already proved capable of building towers 30 centimeters long from carbon rods and other platforms able to support a kilogram of weight. The robots can work with glass, metal, wood, and electronic components. And in one demonstration, they made a carbon truss structure with wires and colored LEDs mixed in to serve as a lab's Christmas tree. We can scale to many more robots at a low cost, says Wang Foy, who thinks the system could develop into a new approach to manufacturing. Many electronic components are the right size to be handled by his micro-robots, he says, and teams of them might prove a good way to lay them out onto circuit boards. Now, think about some of the factories in China that have been talking about roboticizing component creation. This is pretty scary. I wonder where SRI International, let's click on this, is located. This is Wang Foy's lab. Ultra-compact variable transmissions for robots. I don't know. Let's see. About us. Where's a mailing address? Business model, leadership staff. I don't know. It doesn't say. Oh, maybe if you go to the careers page. Hold on. All right. Well, let's find a search jobs. No. Oh, here, search jobs. All right, they have locations in Michigan, Puerto Rico, Arlington, Virginia, Alabama, Harrisonburg, Virginia, Montana, Greenland, Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, Lexington Park, Maryland. Wait a second, I'm seeing a bunch of locations. I mean, Ann Arbor, Michigan, of course, is where a lot of artificial intelligence is happening because of the car companies. Arlington, Virginia, I think that there's a lot of military-type stuff or government-type stuff down there. And we have Lackland Air Force in Texas, and Lexington Park, Maryland is more government and alphabet agencies. Menlo Park, California, Princeton, New Jersey, lots of chemical companies. St. Petersburg, Florida, Tokyo, Japan. So they have lots of locations. So they have this mini micro robot construction system running. It doesn't say what office it's in. We can scale to many more robots at a low cost, he says. And SRI's micro workers are simple. They are just small magnetic platforms with simple wire arms on top, and they can move only when placed on a surface with a specific pattern of electrical circuits inside. Sending current through the coils beneath exerts a force on the magnets and steers the robots around. And if they put artificial intelligence in charge of that, they could have a whole manufacturing platform. Wang Foy has written software to do just that. And he used it to choreograph the movements of over 1,000 tiny robots in a complex circulating pattern. That shows it should be possible to have them work in large teams, he says. And the robots' wire arms are unable to move independently, but creating a team of robots with different types of arms makes it possible to do complex work. Building a truss structure requires three types of workers. If you remember this, we just read about the DNA nanobots on Friday and how they had arms, a torso, and legs. Listen to this. Building a truss structure requires three types of workers. One operates a kind of toothpick dispenser, pushing a lever to release a toothpick-sized carbon rod. Another robot dips its arms into a water trough and puts droplets on the ends of its arms and then uses surface tension to pick up the rod. And then a third robot uses a glue station, dipping its arms and then applying the glue to the structure under construction. Finally, the robot that picked up the rod presses it into place and waits for an ultraviolet light to switch on to cure the glue. It can then withdraw and pick up a new rod, and that's kind of how they do bonding on your teeth. My old dentist used to have one of those little ultraviolet lights. He'd do like a filling, or he'd put on a crown, and then he'd have this ultraviolet light that he'd shine on it. The software controlling the robots can also move the platform they are sitting on. It moves the platform each time a new layer is complete, so the robot's working space stays the same as the structure that they are building grows. It is much like 3D printing technology, but microbots promise to be more efficient to make complex objects in small quantities rather than conventional mass production technology. That is partly because microrobots can be reprogrammed to do completely new tasks, and partly because they are inexpensive. We sometimes call this megahertz manipulation, he says. Listen to that. And we can think of it as manipulation at rates we are used to seeing in information processing. Oh, my God. This is mind-bending. So now we're going to do manufacturing at the rate of information transfer, helping at the level of atomic structures, helping to make circuit boards. We found that as well. Helping to make circuit boards in small batches for prototyping new electronic devices is one possible application. Hobbyists and small companies working on electronics hardware today make very few prototype circuit boards due to the time it takes to assemble them by hand and the expense and delay of paying for small runs at dedicated plants. Wang Foy also thinks that this approach might be useful for assembling devices that combine electronic and optical components, for example, to interface with fiber optic cables. Because silicon and optical components can't be processed in the same step, that industry often uses manual assembly to put them together. And in the field of optical electronics, people have not found a good way to integrate indium phosphate lasers with silicon components. The scale of those things is the size of a carbon rod that we are using here. So he just found a way to maybe make bazillions of dollars for himself. So where do we go from here? Well, researchers built a microscopic robot out of DNA. This is a different story from the one we read the other day. September 14, 2017, the robot can move around, pick up objects, and sort them at an atomic level. For decades, scientists have been dreaming of one day creating tiny nanobots that can work at a microscopic scale, building things one molecule at a time, or purifying our bloodstreams. Well, we might actually enjoy the work of those nanobots someday, but for now, they are still in the realm of science fiction, wink or not. A group of Caltech researchers are working to change that, building a prototype nanobot made of just DNA. The researchers built the robot using three pieces, each individually constructed from strands of DNA. The first piece is a DNA leg that can move the robot around. The second consists of 2 feet that can attach to a special surface and move the robot around. And only 1 foot can be attached to a surface at a time. So when one is down, the other one lifts forward to walk. And that's the end of that story. Man, I hate this, where now they're telling me every other day with some of my scientific journals that I read that I need to subscribe and pay for this. These paywalls really suck. All right, so here was another one. We started looking at Craig Vatner the other day again and some of his work with DARPA in the manufacturing of custom organisms. He was the father of synthetic DNA and synthetic organisms. Listen to this, repairing organs with the touch of a nanochip. This new device changes the function of cells by injecting them with synthetic DNA. Researchers at Ohio State University have developed a way to change cells inside the body from one type to another on the fly with just one touch from a nanochip. This new technology called tissue nanotransfection, which is a horrifying term, tissue nanotransfection, could be used to repair and to regenerate body tissue, including organs, that is non-invasive and painless. And you won't even know that it is happening to you, Johnny. And hold on 1 second, because I'm going to, and I shouldn't have done that, but no, I'm going to back up. I clicked on that, but it took me to another page. When these things come out for the first time, it is basically crossing the chasm from impossible to possible, says Shandan Sen, the co-leader of the study. We have established feasibility. Previously, experiments with this sort of cell type conversion was done outside of the body in petri dishes, but now you're going to become the guinea pig. Even if cells from the test subject were removed from the body, converted in a lab, and then reinserted into the body, those new cells often incited an immune response and were rejected. Sen's method is unique because the conversion takes place entirely inside of the body, preventing an immune response. But working in the body can be complicated. The moment you go in vivo, the complexity is significantly elevated. Now you have to deal with a lot of parameters that are beyond your control. To keep it simple, Sen's trials focused on skin cells in mice and pigs, and the first step is to place the nanochip on the affected area. When the chip touches the skin, it sends a snippet of synthetic DNA into the surface cells using an electrical current, which lasts less than 1/10 of a second. The genetic code of the synthetic DNA differs depending on the desired outcome. For example, if the researchers want to convert the skin cell to a nerve cell, they use a different code than they would to convert the skin cell to a bone cell. So this is like iPS stem cells on the fly using synthetic DNA and a little zippity zap. One of Sen's experiments successfully healed a mouse's injured leg. Because scan showed lack of blood flow in the mouse's leg, researchers inserted DNA that would change skin cells to the endothelial cells that form blood vessels. I better be careful because my issue with my leg circulation, they might be offering this instead of implants. It might be little synthetic DNA nanobots. Within a week of treatment, the mouse had blood flowing through its leg again, and not only did the process work to reprogram local cells at the site of injury, but the entire leg was affected. This is because the mouse's body also did some repair work itself. He turned him into a cyborg. There are perhaps steps that the body itself can mount for its own rescue. So what is happening here is that we are enabling the body's rescue system by tipping it off in a positive way. I'm going to tell you something. Growing new circulatory system is not something that necessarily needs little synthetic DNA nano cells to do. When I was in the hospital, the doctors had actually talked about that. I have this blockage in my leg, and they were trying to figure out where my pulse was on my foot. And they found that it was way over the other side in another place. And they're like, huh, that's kind of strange. But if you have a blockage, your body acts like a tree that is looking for water to give nutrients and blood to tissues in the body. So what happens is when there is a blockage, the blood cells act like roots and start growing in other directions, looking to take the nutrients to where they belong. That was the first time I'd ever heard of that. I asked quite a few questions of the vascular surgeons, but I was very interested in that. So now these guys are saying that putting this little nano chip patch on and injecting some sort of synthetic DNA, this is going to help it repair the tissue. Robert Diegelman, an expert in tissue injury and repair, sees Sen's work as a key to unlocking more information about how we reprogram cells inside of the body. A lot more research has to be done to specifically target cells other than fibroblast skin cells and to reprogram certain genes. But what he's got here is really exciting. Sen and his team want to continue experimenting with the technology, and they plan to run clinical trials on humans next year. Oh my God. We are working on animals is less risky, but it is also less realistic because it does not take into account the human body's own response. Of course, there'll be problems. Step right up. But over time, we will fix those problems. So as they are integrating man and machine and turning us into the petri dishes, just like our environment, to test all of this new 21st century technology. Here's another one. Carbon nanotube threads could generate electricity just from your bloodstream. What? Oh, yes. See, making these little nano machines generate their own electricity or find some way to be mobile without having to put a battery into them has been the holy grail for a very long time. Now they are using all of these great newfound ways using the Green Initiative to find up ways to power these little electronic devices. To power wearable electronics, engineers for years have been tinkering with ways to generate electricity from our bodies. They have cooked up schemes to convert heat, footsteps, muscle motions into electricity. And now a team from Fudan University in China has come up with a method for generating electricity from blood flow just using tiny fibers spun from carbon nanotubes. The idea is that fiber could be implanted in blood vessels to harvest the energy from blood flowing. It's kind of like wave technology for the ocean. And they have presented the rudimentary concept in Angewandte Chemie, which is looks like it's a technical publication. And they haven't yet tested the device in animals. To make a 0.8 millimeter diameter fiber, they either wrap a plastic fiber with an ordered array of carbon nanotubules, or they simply twist a carbon nanotube sheet to make it a yarn-like thread. The researchers call the system a mini version of hydropower. But the principle is different. When the fiber comes in contact with a salt solution, an electrical double layer builds up on the interface between the immersed nanotubes and the solutions, and with the nanotube surface becoming negatively charged and a thin layer of solution becoming positively charged. As the solution flows past negative ions in the solution, electrons are drawn from the nanotube to try to balance out the electrical double layer. But they don't quite succeed. More charge builds up at the front of the flow, and this leads to a potential difference between two ends of the fiber, generating voltage and electrical currents. Other teams have made nanotube-based yarns that generate electricity when they are twisted or stretched. And when the fiber is put in a tube that is connected on each end with a copper wire, and that has salty fluid flowing through it, is our blood salty? It generates power with an efficiency of over 23%, and this is higher than previously reported in fiber-shaped energy harvesting devices. Remember, eventually, you and I are going to be energy harvesting devices. They're going to make you work and create energy with your kinetic movement to help pay for your ability to consume resources on this planet. A friend used to talk about that a lot, and I never believed him, but I truly believe that at some point in the future, especially with the universal basic income, the machine's coming to take all the jobs, how we're going to have this society where no one has to interact and just let the machines do all the work, and we'll be able to just sit around and be fed grapes and consume the forever more scarce natural resources. Well, this is one we covered on Friday. CBC, it's a Canadian news publication, cbc.ca. A microbot a day keeps the doctor away. Scientists close to perfecting edible gelatin nanobots. And they look at these little actuators. They kind of crawl around inside of you and deliver medicine. And they can also be used in animals. They could be used in exploration of your digestive system. Well, listen to this. This might even be some of the same little creatures. This is out of IEEE Spectrum, October 11th, 2017. A Fitbit for the stomach. I remember they got everyone used to wearing Fitbits, and it's all for your own good. It's all to keep you healthy and to keep you safe. Well, we admit to a weird fascination with electronics that can be swallowed, and that would be the author, not me. Whether it is robots or cameras or edible actuators, we find them very James Bond level cool. Well, here's another one for you. A flexible sensor developed at MIT and Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston that can monitor movements in the stomach, sense ingestion, and power itself at least for 2 days without degrading. The device, described this week in the Journal of Nature Biomedical Engineering, could be used to record how frequently a person is eating and help monitor various gut disorders. Understanding gut movement helps us as healthcare providers to potentially intervene and to really help patients, says study author Giovanni Traverso, a gastroenterologist and biomedical engineer at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. Ding. The 2x2.5 centimeter device consists of a flexible polymer called a polyamide printed with electronic circuits, the gold electrode atop of a material called PZT, and a platinum electrode on its underside. PZT is a piezoelectric material capable of producing an electrical charge in response to mechanical force. It makes you wonder how long it's going to be before they use little nanobots to build these types of things, like the ones we read about. A thin device could then be rolled into a capsule and swallowed, though no one was actually doing that in the current study. The engineers tested their devices in pigs. Pigs seem to be the favorite animal lately, using several different techniques to get it into the animal's stomachs, and they don't quite explain how. Still, the flexibility is paramount, says co-author Kanan Dadravin, an assistant professor in MIT's Media Lab, in a press release, and it is significantly improves the safety by easing the device's passage through the GI tract. Once in the stomach, the thin sheet sticks to the mucal lining of the stomach walls and detects any movements there, and that movement varies enough that the device can distinguish among different types of materials being digested. Plus, it harnesses the movement in the stomach for energy to power itself, creating tens of millivolts in the current study. That unique ability to self-power could not be replicated to develop long-term power systems for other devices in the gut and the body without the need for an external battery, he adds. The current prototype worked for up to 48 hours without mechanical or electrical degradation, the team found, a feat for a flexible electronic facing the acidic environment of the stomach. In pigs, and this was pretty horrifying, the team ran a USB cable outside of the stomach to download the recorded gut activity, but don't worry about that, because Trasverso has several other projects that he is working on to explore ways to collect the data from the GI tract via wireless communication. But for now, the device is just proof of concept, and he imagines that in the future, doctors could use it for patients with gut movement disorders, such as gastroparesis, a condition associated with diabetes, in which the stomach does not empty properly. Once we are all comfortable swallowing tiny circuit boards, the device could become ubiquitous, like a Fitbit to measure your food intake. And while it sounds easier to simply write down everything that one consumes, studies show that we are not actually very good at that, you puny humans. So an automatic system, a Fitbit in your stomach, could improve those records and potentially lead to greater weight loss, especially for individuals struggling with obesity. It would be a little human black box. This could help benchmark in an objective fashion what is being ingested to help self-regulate, and it can make it easier for the individual to recognize what is happening in an unbiased way. That means you can't lie to yourself, Johnny, about the Cheetos that you ate. All right, so check out this one. This one came out of the Daily Mail. This caught my attention today. AI machines injected into our bodies could give us superhuman strength and let us control our gadgets using the power of thought within just the next 20 years. Well, most of us will probably still be around 20 years from now, so this might be something that we actually see. AI implants will create humans that are melded to machines, say experts, including Jules. This means that we can control our environment with thought and gesture alone. So this is going to take it the next step beyond wearables and ingestibles and allow these to be injectables. These tiny machines will also repair and improve our muscles, our cells, and our bones. Comments were made when AI experts submitted evidence to the House of Lords Artificial Intelligence Committee in the UK. AI nanomachines injected into our brains and other parts of our bodies could be a new generation of cyborgs within 20 years. That is according to a senior inventor at IBM's Hersley's Innovation Center, who claims that in two decades, humans will have superhuman strength and be able to control gadgets just using the power of thought. Speaking to the House of Lords Artificial Intelligence Committee, John McNamara said that the technology to create a new generation of humans that are melded to the machines will be just within the next few decades, and we will see huge leaps forward in what the human consciousness is able to do. We may see AI nanomachines being injected into our bodies, he told peers, according to the Telegraph. And these will provide huge medical benefits, such as being able to repair damage to cells, muscles, and bones, or perhaps even augment them. This will mean that we can embed ourselves into our surroundings and control our environment with thought and gesture alone. This is going to be the ultimate Internet of Things. He predicted, quote-unquote, political avatars that will search through vast quantities of governmental data and tell people how they should vote. Yeah, there you go. Tell people how they should vote. He claimed that the creation of technology that allows our bodies to join with machines will also mean that we could, quote, enhance human cognitive abilities directly, potentially offering greater improved mental, as well as being able to utilize vast quantities of computing power to augment our own thought processes. And they've talked about that before, the swarm learning. They are already doing that with artificial intelligence and that Baxter robot. And they've talked about figuring out how to connect brains across the internet. Don't think that this isn't going to be the next version of the social network to get you to connect your brain so you could talk to others with just thought. I mean, guys, this is the ultimate dangling carrot. And I'm going to tell you right now, this will forever enslave you in this internet of everything that they will not only own but control. However, he warned that these nanomachines might only be available to wealthier people. I say let them have it. And this would mean that they would be disproportionately stronger, have better cognitive ability, smart health, and lifespan. Noel Sharkey, Emeritus Professor of AI and Robotics, University of Sheffield, also provides evidence to the committee. He raises concern about biases being embedded into machine learning, and the immediate concern is that by ceding our decisions or control to the machines, the humans start accepting their decisions as correct or better than their own and stop paying attention, he says. That's what we're already doing by listening to the television. We let the television dictate our reality, and we believe it and just go along with it, and nobody argues the point. Miles Brundage and Alan Defoe of the University of Oxford warned people's jobs could be at risk from AI, which I would say injecting nanobots into your bodies would be even a worse of a risk. AI is likely to exceed human performance in most cognitive domains, and this possesses substantial safety risks, he told peers. That's why I can't wait to get my new t-shirt. I did order one of those. With shipping, it was $10. and the evolution to destruction. Dr. Jochen Liedner, director of research at Thomson Reuters, also said that older people or those with regional accents could struggle using voice recognition systems in the future. And this takes us full circle back to virtual assistants using voice control that's going to end up in your BMW, your Ford, and your VW Bug, as well as in your home with your Amazon Alexa and your Google Home. Such systems would likely be trained with British voices available in London if the company developing the systems is London-based. And as well as asking experts to submit evidence, the government also commissioned an independent review on artificial intelligence called Growing the Artificial Intelligence Industry in the UK. The report recommended basic information about people's health and lifestyle should be opened up to allow major advances to be made in developing AI. The report makes 18 recommendations on how to make the UK a world leader in AI, including boosting skills through an industry-funded master program and increasing diversity in the sector. It calls for the Alan Turing Institute, named in honor of the wartime codebreaker, to become a national center for AI, and so that the government should expand its support for all businesses in the field. And guys, this is how we are going to become globalized, bagged and tagged in every bit of our existence will be controlled and monitored by these things. AI nanomachines will repair our insides one day. This is out of Market Business News, October 15, 2017. AI nanomachines will repair parts of the human body from the inside, say scientists. Artificial intelligence, future healthcare professionals will inject tiny AI machines to repair our bodies. And with AI nanomachines, we will also be able to control the world with just our thoughts. And this is part of the same story. AI nanomachines will be fixing our insides within the next 20 years. And the state-of-the-art microtechnology will fix people's cells, their muscles, and their bones. But here's something that I want to point out to you. Remember, we've talked about how these technologies are always a double-edged sword. August 30th, 2017, out of sciencemag.org, and this is another industry publication, nanomachines can drill holes into cancer cells. Someday, doctors might use nanomachines to puncture cancer cells. The new machines are so tiny, just a nanometer wide, that it would require 50,000 of them in a swarm to be lined up across the width of a human hair. And although these nano drillers bear no physical resemblance to a machine, the machine in place with the motor rotor spinning, and it drills across the cell membrane. Molecules are added to the arms that can work as chemical zip codes to selectively direct the nanomachines to a particular structure on a cell surface, such as a protein. And with the specific application, nanomachines in a dish targeted, punctured, which means caused them to leak contents, bubble up, and killed prostate cancer more rapidly than neighboring hamster and mouse cells, the team reported today in Nature. Up next, scientists plan to test the machines in microorganisms and fish. So think about that one. Little nanomachines that can drill holes. In this case, they were targeted at cancer cells. But tomorrow, maybe it could be a new assassination machine. I mean, always remember, double-edged sword. Anything that can cure you can probably kill you as well if put into the wrong hands. And as they are able to control these things outside of the body, this was from September 18, 2016. Mind-controlled nanobots used to release chemicals in living cockroaches. Oh my God, out of SingularityHub.com. This is wild. A team of Israeli scientists developed a contraption that uses a person's brainwaves to remotely control DNA-based nanobots while the nanobots were living inside of the cockroach. And I'm not hearing any music. Sorry about that. Oh, and there we go. My clock is wrong. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Have a decent evening.